Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the old In and Out. This is Dr. William Schimmel, Bill Schimmel, on WS Accordion Radio. We welcome you, and I'd like to introduce my co-host, Brian Dewan. Brian, how are you this evening?
I'm all right.
Good.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing really well. We have a nice show for you tonight. I would say it's even an exciting one. I know, Brian, you've had a few excursions that you have done since the last time we've talked. Can you fill us in on some of your activities?
Well, I went to take part in an animation festival.
Oh, that's great.
That was in Switzerland.
Really?
In Baden, and I was showing some film strips and singing songs in between. Lately I've just been around here. I can't even remember. I don't think I've really gone any place since then other than just doing gigs here and there in some different states.
Well, tell us about some of those gigs.
Let's see. Well, I did a gig in Boston that was a lot of fun, and I was playing with these kind of Russian music bands or Eastern European stuff, and there was I was playing some accordion and singing, and I sang the song about the Boston Arm.
Ah.
And there was somebody there who I guess worked at MIT and said that she had the Boston Arm on her desk, or that there was even three different prototypes. And that blew my mind because I didn't know that such a thing was still around.
Could you fill us in a little bit about the Boston Arm?
Oh, yeah. Well, the Boston Arm was a kind of cybernetic arm that was invented in the 50s that was being developed. And I think one of the people behind it was Norbert Wiener, who's considered the father of cybernetics and who coined the term cybernetics in the 40s.
Uh-huh.
And
well, that,
so, I remember my dad telling me a story about the development of this mechanical arm, and I heard this name, the Boston Arm, and how it was in a special box with this sort of velvet lining, you know, around the arm, and there were these generals that were funding it, and they were demonstrating the thing, and something went wrong, like there was a short, and the thing leapt out of the box and knocked off the general's hat, according to the story, and if it had gone any lower, it would have smacked him in the head and injured him, and it freaked him out, and then that was kind of the end of the project, or they lost all the funding, and my dad would say, well, you know, because it was like an arm, it made people feel like it was coming to life and getting them. If it had been any other machine, you'd just think the machine malfunctioned. So he kind of felt like that was part of the power. The whole thing kind of going kaput was because the arm was coming to get you.
Uh-huh.
So I remember years later asking him about it and wanted to do a song about it.
Yeah.
And he said, remember you told me that story of the Boston Arm and jumps out of the box and knocks off the hat and they lose the money? And he says, well, that wasn't the Boston Arm. That was another arm.
Wow. Yeah.
So that was a nifty gig.
Did you play accordion on that one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
So tonight, you know, I usually talk to you in Catskill, New York. But tonight I'm talking to you somewhere else.
Tonight I'm at my cousin Leon's place. In New Rochelle, New York.
Uh-huh.
Just a little north of the Bronx.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we've been recording here. We've been recording music for a documentary about women ski jumpers.
Ah, one of my favorite subjects. Yeah.
It's an interesting movie. It's quite a window into a world.
Just
under an hour. So we're just finishing up the music. Pretty soon. And in the meantime, we've had to keep getting up and stopping the machine to record because trick-or-treaters are showing up.
Uh-huh.
Give them candy.
Yeah, do you have a lot of candy to give them as they show up?
Well, as it turns out, there wasn't enough, and so we had to flee and go get supper at the diner because we were out of candy and were empty-handed.
Is there a good diner in your neighborhood?
Yeah, there's one nearby here called the Mirage.
Ah, I kind of like that already.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we used to go to a place called the Thruway Diner, which had been there, since the early 50s. But that was recently torn down. And so that was a place that had been around a long time. It's quite a bustling business, too.
Yeah. What did you have for dinner? What did you have for dinner, Brian?
I had a hamburger.
You had a hamburger. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what did Leon have?
He had some kind of a turkey sandwich with gravy on it.
Ah, that's a very diner. Both of you guys had diner cuisine tonight.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And then on the way here, being very careful not to hit people in the road, because there are people all over the road, adults and children.
Oh, yeah, all going out trick-or-treating, you mean?
Trick-or-treating. So you have to be very careful, because there are people in the road.
Yeah. Did you guys have dessert, too, like a piece of pie?
Oh, no. No. There was no dessert. But you know what? We didn't need no dessert.
No. So, did you get to know any of these women ski jumpers?
No, I've only seen them in the film.
Uh-huh.
But they're quite interesting characters, and it follows them over the course of a few years, and the story develops that they want to compete in the Olympics, but it turns out that there is no women's ski jumping in the Olympics. You know, there's women's luge and other things,
yeah,
not ski jumping for some reason. And so they were trying to get into the Olympics, but they aren't allowed because they're women. So it was this thing that went to the Canadian Supreme Court, as a sex discrimination case, but it didn't go in their favor. And it's just hard to even sort of understand why there's such opposition to it.
Yeah.
After seeing it several times, I began to sort of get a picture. But it's an interesting story. All these different things unfold. So some of them were like these, big champions, but they can't get into the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
Because they, anyway, so.
Is there any particular personality trace that they have? Let's say, for instance, there's a whole culture of women wrestlers. Is there any particular personality traits that are unusual or interesting to talk about?
Well, I think that they're such funny people. They're, really plain spoken and very down to earth.
Yeah.
But also like just very intensely focused and kind of eccentric, and they don't really seem to see themselves that way. But they're pretty funny. And, there's five of them that would hang out together all the time, like they're this team, or they compete against each other.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's been a really wonderful project
to
work on. And
what kind of...
a lot of electronic music score to it, too. We have some other instruments in it, too.
Oh, yeah. That was my next question, actually. Yeah. What kind of score did you do for this?
Well, it's mostly our Dewanatron instruments that we make.
Yeah.
That are analog synthesizers.
Uh-huh.
But there's some accordion in there, too.
What kind of accordion did you find yourself writing?
What kind of accordion?
What kind of accordion music did you find yourself writing, especially for ski jumping, women's ski jumping?
Yeah. Well, there isn't really accordion music. It's more like the accordion will play a note or an interval or just do some little thing.
Uh-huh.
It's just a kind of a sound and a texture, and there are many different ones that kind of interweave with each other, so it doesn't really play any figures. Most of the music is more kind of disconnected sounds that kind of mingle into the actual microphone film sound.
Oh, that sounds great.
It's coming out pretty good, so it's been a lot of fun. Yeah, so there's some accordion sounds in there, but there is no...
No genre music necessarily.
Yeah.
Now, when will... is there any... Is this being made for television?
I don't know that it's made for a certain thing, but I think, you know, it certainly could easily go on television because it is under an hour, close to an hour.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it will first go to things like film festivals.
Of course, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't know where things go, you see. I don't know where films go or the conduits they travel in.
Yeah, as you said, as you just said, they usually start at some sort of film festival.
Yeah,
and
so it's gonna go in a film festival.
Yeah,
and it all has to be a done deal by December. So Leon and I are almost done with our part of it.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
And also, I one of the things I wanted to bring up today because it also played an important part in some of my recent work is working or performing for kids.
Yeah.
And yeah, I understand you. Yeah.
That I've done a bunch in the past, and those are really delightful experiences. I remember doing a show out in Long Island at a school, and it was for an entire school that was K through 8. So it was a big age range. You know, there was 3-year-olds, and then there were kids ready for junior high school, like maybe up to 12 or 13.
Yeah.
Or maybe, no, older than that, because it was 8th grade, so it's really more like 15.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite a span. But it kind of worked out well that I got to kind of put together a program of stuff that seemed like that span of age groups could find something in to enjoy. And Leon and I did earlier this year a show at some schools down in, where were we? I think we were in Virginia. But, first we played for a high school group and then middle school and then the elementary school and then the kindergartners. And we were doing a Duanatron show with our electronic stuff, and we would let the kids come up on the stage and, turn some knobs. And it was really sort of funny to have these progressively younger audiences who are just going further back into the earliest reaches of youth. So that was really cool, especially with the kindergartners.
Yeah, I've had that experience lately. The last week, I was playing at the Kids Eurofest, and that's in Washington, D.C., and it's sponsored by it seems to me that the particular venues that I played in, the Finnish embassy had a lot to do with it, and I was playing accordion along with a Finnish flutist, we were giving concerts there for kids. We did one concert at a local library. And then we did a couple concerts, and it ended up at the French Embassy. And most of the kids were, let's say, between kindergarten and I think the oldest was 12. And I really enjoyed playing for these kids, especially as an accordionist, because a lot of these kids were seeing an accordion for the very, very, very first time.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember playing at a nursery school, and I had an accordion, and I let the kids come up, and I was putting a little pressure on the bellows, and then they'd press a button or a key, and they'd press it, and then the sound would come out, and then they'd run away.
Well, yeah, I know.
I was so excited by it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that kind of happened to me also. As a matter of fact, I had at the end of the show, I had a bunch of kids all crowded around, like, trying to push buttons and push keys. And what I had to do is I had to stop them all. I had to say, okay, kids, one at a time. And then, of course, one of the teachers got wind of that, and then she lined the kids up. And one at a time, they all took their turn, And they had a choice of a button or a key.
So, a decision to be made.
Yeah, a decision to be made. And so obviously, when they pushed a button or pushed a key, I played a sound. I used the bellows. And they seemed to be quite content with that experience. And very happy.
And there's a lot packed into that experience. And it's funny if you're, if you've been used to playing the accordion for a long time, to be able to be in the presence of somebody who has not really experienced it, and even just doing that one little interactive thing with it, that's the first time they've pressed the button and heard the sound come out, and you kind of then can see it through their eyes.
And also, another thing I absolutely loved about it is none of the kids, because of their age, none of them had any of the baggage concerning, like, the image issues of the accordion.
Yeah, so it's a very direct experience.
Totally.
One that's been intercepted by some other stuff.
Yeah, in other words, they had no stuff. They just dug it. They just dug it because they dug it.
Yeah.
And I really love that. And it was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful playing for these kids. And I'm really very very happy. I think the oldest person was about age 12, and that was even an exception. Most of the kids were younger. I have no idea what the situation would have been if we played for kids in their teens, whether or not there would have been a cool factor involved. I really don't know, or a cool or uncool factor. I really don't know. But all I know is this particular, yes, yeah.
I think that with kids at that age group, like, maybe there is, in terms of, like, keeping your hands to yourself, like, so you don't know what somebody made of the experience, but I think it's also important in that situation to just let people look at it, and then they can be freer to get a load of it because there isn't somebody monitoring them to, like, see their reaction.
Right,
and
right.
They can be just, like, left to regard it and take it in and not have to make some sort of show of appreciation.
Right. Because I remember, when it came question time, one of the first questions was, from the audience is, what is that instrument you're playing? And I would have to say an accordion. And that's the first, most of the kids didn't even know what the instrument was, which was also cool.
Yeah, and then you realize these things that seem so familiar, like it's very arbitrary what is familiar to you in your world or what is alien to you, and it happened for them that they hadn't before had occasion to experience an accordion.
Right.
And so here it is, this new thing, the accordion.
And so that was, I had a wonderful time, in Washington DC, and I had an opportunity to stay, at least my hotel was in Georgetown, which I love. And it was a good experience. I've also done some kid shows in connection with the Lincoln Center Meet the Artist program, where some of the kids were brought in to the Lincoln Center area from various schools.
Yeah.
And that was also a very, very rewarding experience and a very, very similar response. And then Ula Suko and I, she's the Finnish flutist and singer, we also did a concert at the David Rubenstein Atrium. That's that area around Lincoln Center. They redid it. Now it's now a performance space and a cafe. It used to be this public space that where you could go rock climbing years ago.
Wow. I don't think I've ever seen this.
Yeah, people used to go rock climbing there. And apparently that no longer exists. They've redone the space. And they have a lot of public performances there that are actually free. And we did one in August, and it was wonderful to see, like, these little toddlers as we're playing crawling on stage and the parents having to pull them away. It was wonderful, actually. All of a sudden, we're playing, and these little toddlers are, like, crawling up on the stage, and their parents are chasing after them. And so they're digging. So they're really, really, really digging this accordion and flute duo.
Yeah,
and,
boy.
Yeah, and we give them a variety of stuff and take them through an experience virtually a multi-styled presentation. And I think in that case the kids are off to a really, really good start getting their first introduction to an instrument like the accordion.
Yeah. Yeah, once I was working at a trade show where they had all these kazoos distributed to people in the audience.
Really?
And I had to lead people in singing a song, and they were supposed to play along with the kazoos, which had a company logo on it.
Oh, wow.
But then it turned out that, you know, and we do the show over and over again, in all of the audiences, only like about half the people had ever heard of a kazoo.
No kidding.
So I always just thought it was a thing that everyone knew or heard about, or was this familiar object or toy or what have you, but a lot of people had never experienced a kazoo, and I had to tell them not to blow into it, and that the idea was to hum into
it. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they got it, but they didn't know about that.
Oh, I love the kazoo.
Yeah, so it was strange to be amongst these audiences in succession, one after another, of adults who had never experienced a kazoo.
Oh, that's really I like that story as well. And all of a sudden, you had a kazoo orchestra in front of you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of songs did you play?
They were covers, except that they had retooled the song YMCA to fit their company.
Uh-huh.
So that was, but then the rest of it was just a show of cover songs. But it was quite an experience. There were these girls whose job it was to get people to go into the theater, which wasn't really an enclosure, but it was this little area. And they would say to me how the bosses were getting on their case, saying, "You're not filling the theater," and how they had to, like, really be pushy and get the people in there.
Yeah.
But then when they did that, the people who were content to just stand around the perimeter, they'd be driven off when they were trying to get them to go in.
Yeah.
And then they would explain to me how they were making it worse by driving them away, but that's what the bosses were telling them to do. So that's the way these things go.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Brian, tell me, what are we going to hear of yours tonight?
It's a song called Gold October, which I learned from a book of school songs.
Ah.
And the book is called The High Road of Song.
Sounds good to me.
And there are all sorts of songs. Some of them are traditional. Some of them are written by various authors. The book doesn't have a date in it. My guess is that it was published in the 20s or the 30s.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And I think it was published in Canada, but no
really?
Copyright date.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And of course there are many seasonal songs in there.
Is Canadian Sun, like Canadian Sunset, or,
No,
I don't think so. It's probably, when you think of Canada, you think of outdoors, you know? At least I do. I don't know.
Well, it's got a lot of outdoors.
Uh-huh.
So this song is one of these, there's a bunch of autumn-themed songs that are in the book, and this one is called Gold October. And it's a song I think about every October and almost never play because I hadn't ever really learned it well enough to do it. I think I did it in a show once many years ago. So I always think about it, but then October goes by and I don't play it. So this year I get to do it. So I made this recording.
I'm really, really happy we're going to be hearing it on the air tonight. And so we're going to hear Brian's version of Gold Autumn. And you're singing this, Brian, is that correct?
Yeah.
And you're accompanying yourself on?
On accordions. There's two different accordions, a piano and a penny whistle.
And penny whistle. Oh, that's great. And what two accordions are you using in this particular cut?
My regular accordion, which is a Bertini.
Yep.
And then, if it's not a Hohner, it's just like one that is a, you know, Musette-tuned.
Yeah, very wet-tuned accordion, yeah.
Very
yep.
wet-tuned and very, and also in more dried autumn leaf condition than is my Bertini.
Uh-huh. Well, that sounds exciting. Now, now Brian's Gold Autumn is going to be followed by two selections that I will be performing, and that will be from an album called Portrait in Seven Shades, and that is a piece by Ted Nash. It's a jazz piece by Ted Nash, and it's seven portraits of contemporary painters. And it's performed by the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra, conducted by Ted Nash and Wynton Marsalis. And we're going to hear the final two cuts of that. And that's going to be Chagall and Pollock. And I'm featured in both of those tracks. On Chagall, I'm featured as an accompanying accordionist. And the soloist is Natalie Bonan, a solo violinist. And she's also in our group with Ted Nash called Odeon. And then the final cut will be Pollock, as in Jackson Pollock. And that will feature an elaborate accordion solo by me, accompanied by the Jazz and Lincoln Center Orchestra. Now, I want to say something about this, is that this album, Portrait in Seven Shades, is a contender for the 2011 Grammys. And so, if any of you are listening, are members of the Academy that have voting privileges, we urge you to give it a listen. You can listen to it on Ted Nash's MySpace page, and vote. I am nominated for a best improvised jazz solo on Pollock, and Natalie is up for best improvised jazz soloist on Chagall, and apparently there's five other categories where this album is a contender as well. So hopefully we'll see some really, really good Grammy activity on this album. So those of you who have voting privileges or are members, we urge you to give a listen to all of this and cast your votes in our favor. And so, yeah. So we're going to hear three pieces tonight, and we're going to bring tonight's show to a close. And Brian, it was great talking with you as always.
Oh, great talking with you.
And give your cousin my absolute best. And we'll be talking very, very, very soon on our next show. And so, ladies and gentlemen, and all of you who are listening in, thank you for dropping by tonight. And we will see you very, very soon on The Old In and Out. This is Dr. William Schimmel. Have a good night.
Gold October, oh crimson robed October, from frost that silvers thy sing of thee as gold. October. Sing summer's woodland tune, those there be that sing of thee a sad October, not heeding how thy laughter is as gay. Thank you.